Hello, and welcome to Benyo Chat. If you're curious about the world, this show is for you. What is it like living in a zero-waste village in Japan? On this episode, I speak to Kana Chan. Kana is living in Kamikatsu, which is Japan's first zero-waste village. She has roots in Canada, but was drawn to living in rural Japan in this more sustainable way of living. I learned a lot about tea farming and the rhythms of rural life in Japan. Hope you enjoy the show. Please like and subscribe as it helps others find the podcast. Thank you. Be well. Hey, everyone. I'm super excited to be speaking to Kana Chan. Kana is living in Kamikatsu, which is Japan's first zero-waste village. It's in rural Japan. She writes a Substack at Tending Gardens and runs iNow, which is an educational homestay program to stay at Kamikatsu. Kana, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have roots in Canada as well as Japan and Hong Kong. What's the story of what brought you out to Kamikatsu and why?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, my mom is Japanese and my father is from Hong Kong. They actually both met in the UK studying abroad and then immigrated to Canada, where I was born and raised. I had never lived in Japan and I've never actually lived in Hong Kong either, but would visit quite frequently as a child. And I was working during COVID, but my job stopped. And so I had a chance to kind of pause and reflect and decided that I wanted to live in somewhere that was more in nature. And Japan's countryside was somewhere that I wanted to move to. So I looked into that and now here I am in Kamikatsu.
Wow. So you just thought Japan, my roots and countryside and figured it out on a map and just kind of pointed and went, or was there some other kind of impetus or catalyst, or was it really kind of almost as random as that?
Yeah, there's a word in Japanese called goen, which is kind of like fate. And so I definitely do feel like I have some fate that tied me to this place. But I would also say that I studied sustainability. And so I was interested in towns where maybe sustainability was something that the town was thinking about, or there was initiatives related to sustainability. And Kamikatsu is the first zero waste village. And so it was on my radar. But I had no intention of moving to Kamikatsu, but then again, goen, fate, was such so that I had the opportunity to move here. So then I came within a month of kind of researching and starting the search, and that was a year and a half ago.
Great. I'd love to understand a little bit more about your kind of rural life experience versus city life. Like, I've been to Tokyo and Kobe, and particularly Tokyo was, if you've been to big cities like New York or London, although Tokyo is obviously very Japanese, there's something very familiar about it. Lots of people, subways, busyness. Although I know people in Tokyo are very good about crossing the road and there's no actual rubbish around and things like that. But I get the impression when going through the Japanese countryside that the rural life is still quite different. And in some ways, Tokyo being different from rural countryside is kind of more different than Tokyo being different to somewhere like London. Was that your kind of experience? And then I guess you started off in a city and then went off to Kamikatsu.
Yeah, so I spent my whole life in cities, born and raised in a city as well. I was born in Toronto and then moved to Vancouver, so both the largest cities in Canada. And I've spent a bit of time in Tokyo and other big cities in Japan. And it's just such a contrast. I think most noticeably being surrounded by nature, the inconvenience of not having, especially being in a place like Tokyo, I think every two blocks you see a convenience store. And so things are really within arm's reach kind of wherever you are in the city. And here we have to drive 20 minutes to the nearest convenience store. And I would just say the pace feels different. I think anyone who spent enough time in a city knows that there's kind of a flow and there's a pace. And that just feels like it's kind of halted when you're in the countryside and people move at their own pace. Not to say that people aren't busy, but just the perception of time is probably a little bit different.
I noticed that there was a sense of rhythm actually throughout Japan, which I don't really note in Europe and America as much. And you really see it through the seasonality of food, even sometimes the plates and the cutlery. And I get the sense from where you're living, you're very close to that because of the way that you do harvesting, the way that the kind of food cycle works, the dishes that things would come out. So maybe would you reflect on that? And what sort of season is it at the moment? What are you growing and picking or farming?
Yeah, I love talking about the seasons, and I love talking about food through the seasons, because I think it's something that you can only truly experience in the countryside. I think, again, just to contrast to the city, you have kind of anything and everything at your disposal. And here we have one small farmer's market, but the farmer's market only grows what is grown in season. And so you can kind of really see what's available and what's being grown. Right now is the season. It is very hot. It's a hot and humid summer in Japan. But right now what is being grown and harvested is tea. And so Kamikatsu has a long tradition of a fermented tea called awabancha. And it is right now the season to pick the tea leaves.
And I was reading, there's an extraordinary process in your region for doing this, that you still pick it by hand in essentially kind of semi-wild. I mean, they're not fully cultivated, they're patches, and they have this fermentation process, and it was only kind of locally. But maybe how have you found that? And do you think you're going to become a tea farmer, or is this only ever going to be like for local consumption?
I technically am actually the quote-unquote youngest tea farmer, because we did make our own small batch production of awabancha tea last year, my friend and I, Linda. And tea, unlike, for example, green tea, or maybe some black teas that you see in regions in like South Asia, they're usually rows and rows of tea leaves that can be cut by machines. But awabancha is grown kind of wildly in the mountains. So rather than like cultivated, it's kind of more maintained. The kind of bushes are maintained, and machines can't pluck the tea leaves off the stems. And so hand and labor is required. And so it is a very laborious task. And once it's collected, it's boiled, rolled, and then put into wooden barrels and fermented for up to a month, and then dried under the sun for up to 3 days. And when you do the drying process, most farmers say that's the most tedious process, because you have to pick apart each tea leaf because it's been so pressed. And then after that, you have awabancha, fermented tea.
The flavor is like a roasted green tea. Is it worth all of this effort?
I actually would not compare it to green tea. I would compare it more to something herbal. I think because people hear fermented, and it's fermented in the same way that a lot of the pickles are fermented in Japan. Mm. So people imagine it being quite sour or acidic, but it's actually quite mellow, and you don't have, like, matcha has a very strong flavor as well. But maybe something more like a chamomile, you have kind of a lighter flavor.
Wow.
I would say it's quite unique. It's worth trying if you can get your hands on some.
And everything around the village life, or not everything, but it seems so much more manual. Is that really true? Or is this kind of cross between manual and machine? Or is this just a much still seems to be embedded with the countryside traditions out there in Japan?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of both. I think that people who practice it, or practice agriculture, for example, as a living, use machines to harvest rice. But for example, I also am growing rice right now, and it's quite a small plot of land. And so I don't have those kind of machineries, and everything is doable by hand, especially at that capacity. And so I am almost only exclusively manual labor.
And is it just you, or can you get some friends or other people to help you? Or do you have to do your own paddy field?
We do get friends. We do get help when we just had some students visiting Kamikatsu who wanted to make a documentary about Kamikatsu. And kind of part of the exchange was that they would help us with the weeding in our rice fields.
Okay. So how is the rhythm of your day? So kind of this waking up, breakfast, and then you're going out doing a lot of kind of this farming stuff as well as working in the cafe, and then we'll get to the kind of the waste sorting and everything. It's still busy, but this kind of slower, more deliberate rhythm to the day?
It's interesting because this was kind of surprising to me. It's not surprising to some Japanese who at least have a bell that rings at 5 p.m. But in Kamikatsu, there's a bell that goes off at 7, 10, noon, 3, and 5. So five bells during the day. And that kind of breaks apart your day. And the idea was that this was introduced for farmers. And so that kind of rhythm is really true, especially when doing something like tea picking, where you start the day in the morning, and then you have a tea break at 10, then you continue to work until noon, and then you have another tea break at 3, and then you're done the day at 5, and then you really just go home, and then it's dark. And so your days are full, but there is kind of rhythm to it.
Excellent. And what about some of these other things that you've picked and harvested? What have you been most kind of intrigued by? So I was really intrigued by your picture of you picking yuzu, which is a citrus I really like, but I didn't realize the plants had thorns. Obviously there's the bancha tea. I hadn't realized that you were also growing rice. So, I mean, do you grow most of your own food and things, and what's been the most strange or interesting harvest that you've been involved in?
Interesting harvest. Actually, Tokushima, the prefecture that Kamikatsu is located in, is known for citrus fruits. So not just yuzu, but there's kind of a hybrid between yuzu and mikan, which is like a mandarin orange, called yuko. And about 90% of the production of yuko is made in Kamikatsu as well. A lot of this, I didn't even know about these types of citrus fruits, but harvesting these have been quite interesting, and learning about these have been quite interesting. I think more than the harvesting itself, it's interesting to see how people ferment them or make them into juices or make them into things for food. So that part has been more interesting than the actual just repetitiveness of harvesting. Same with the tea leaves. To make the tea is more interesting than just picking the tea leaves.
And it's still very manual, like all the citrus picking is still essentially done by hand rather than machines, right?
Yeah, that is, yeah, all by hand. Yeah.
But I did get the impression that along with the rituals of, say, making the tea and the foods afterwards, there seemed to be a kind of storytelling kind of banter with the sort of workers who work together and sort of come together and do this. And is there some sort of ritual element to that, or is that kind of just like people meeting and chatting and while you're picking?
Yeah, I think that happens naturally. I think because Kamikatsu is a very mountainous village, there's no kind of central gathering spot, maybe other than the recycling center where we recycle our garbage. But otherwise, people are busy doing their own, you know, harvesting. And so when there's the harvesting that requires a lot of people to come together at the same time for, you know, for a shorter season, I think naturally people like to catch up. So there's a lot of chatter. I don't know if that's part of the ritual, but it definitely happens yearly. So
okay, because there's no, like,
maybe that is a ritual,
like you say. I guess there's no religious temple meeting space, so there isn't the kind of town squares you get in some European villages and things like that.
There's a bit of a lag.
Am I back?
Yes, you're back.
Okay. So I was saying, because there's no religious town hall space or temple or like a square that you have in some European type places to sort of meet. It's more sort of dispersed, and people meet actually on the harvest rather than in kind of community spaces.
Yeah. No European square. But actually, there are matsuri, which are festivals in Japan, and that is also another time for gathering. Just recently, a couple days ago, there was a gathering at a temple. You said temple, so that reminded me, where people who were planting rice in the same area came together to kind of say prayers and make wishes for a good harvest in the fall. And so that's something that happens yearly. And so people wrote, kind of wishes that bugs won't eat the crops and wishes that the harvest goes smoothly or that the grass continues to grow well. And so
And
those things still persist.
is there something you found really surprising about overall Japanese culture or Japanese village culture compared to your experience in Canada or even Bangladesh and places like that? It's too big a question, isn't it? It's because there's everything. It's like the food, the people, the everything. I was wondering, I guess, about the everyday rituals or the way that people kind of are or interact with you.
I think, well, growing up in kind of half Japanese household, there's a lot of things that I kind of grown accustomed to. My mom would speak Japanese, and we would still visit Japan every summer when I was young. I think, though, actually living here, I'm aware of how people are very hospitable, and not just like necessarily polite or kind, but particularly in the Japanese countryside, people look out for each other and are very generous with what they have in abundance and are willing to share that abundance. And I have no other countryside experience in Japan to compare that with, but that's certainly the case here for me.
Great. So maybe let's move on to the kind of zero waste aspect, because a lot of this you've talked about kind of rural and the city, which I can kind of get, but still seems kind of amazing, this kind of pace of life and being closer to nature. But it seems that Kamikatsu's kind of gone one further and tried to be much more circular in its living and zero waste. And I was reading you have some extraordinary number of different recyclables that you have to sort, and that everyone spends time in the recycling. Tell me how about this, how people have found the zero wasting. I guess it's kind of closer to how rural farming works to some degree anyway, but we use a lot of plastic in our everyday. Obviously, there's kind of clothing and all of that. I don't know how you find the zero waste, and is there a rhythm to that because everyone gets together and recycles?
Sorry if my dogs are barking in the background.
No worries.
So zero waste is not the zero waste concept in maybe traditionally the West, where you're not producing any garbage. But what Kamikatsu does focus on is recycling all the waste that is produced. We currently recycle 40 into 45 different categories, and that seems like a lot when you hear the number, but there is kind of it's not overwhelming because the separation is done very clearly when you bring your waste to the recycling center, and a lot of the things are just separated by colors. So if you have glass bottles, you have clear, you have green, you have brown, and so that kind of increases the categories very quickly.
And so there's a lot of sorting and recycling. Is that the major element, or are there kind of other things that the village has had to adapt to? And I guess people would probably maybe try and buy in less plastic or single use or that type of thing, or is it much more focused on whatever you do have, just making sure that goes circular and recycled?
And so the zero waste system started about 20 years ago, and there are other efforts, not just recycling, but also on the reduce and reuse side. And so it's not just recycling, but I would say that has been the focus.
Great. And what do and how does that what does the recycling center and things how does that operate? Because everyone, or not quite everyone, but a lot of people in the village rotate and work there, right? It's everyone kind of goes there together, and you have these big sorting machines, and then they crush, and then it goes off. Is that kind of the process? That's what I gathered from the pictures.
Yeah, so every person living in Kamikatsu is responsible for bringing their own waste to the recycling center. And after you bring, you know, your boxes of waste to the recycling center, you separate at the facility. So you actually go into the garbage station. And then after that, and while you're separating, there's staff there all the time who help with the separation. And the staff are managed by the town office. And so there's a lot of support. So you never really get in trouble for improperly separating. And you do get a lot of guidance if you don't know, especially when I first moved here. You know, it's like, where do I put this piece of rubber or something like that? And then after that, yeah, you can also collect points if you recycle into certain categories. And so it's kind of a whole system. There are also a lot of elderly in Kamikatsu. So if you're unable to bring, drive a car or bring your own waste to the separation system, they pick up your garbage once every 2 months and then bring it to the station.
And I guess most people do not have a car. Would that be right? And there's a little carpooling sharing. And I guess most people walk or maybe even cycle.
Actually, most people do have a car because Kamikatsu is very mountainous. About 80% of Kamikatsu is mountainous. So only 20% of kind of flat land. So even the rice field and the kind of personal gardens are kind of on mountains, and so cars are quite necessary. You do see people with e-bikes, but walking is difficult.
Yeah, okay, I didn't get that sense, but yeah, you don't want to be walking 20 minutes just to your paddy field up and down all the time. Yeah. I guess, especially as you get older, and I guess, you know, your nearest, with a village that size, around 1500, was it 1500 mm-hmm. to 2000, your local hospital is going to be quite far away if you need that sort of emergency. I remember you had to travel quite far when you had some sort of injury to attend to. Does that make like life and living that much harder, or is there a kind of rhythm that you just incorporate it in? Is it just an inconvenience, or can you kind of see like, oh, if it was that much more remote, it'd be even harder?
Yeah, I think it depends on what, you know, kind of life circumstance you are in. Being able-bodied and healthy is such a privilege, and I don't normally need any hospital care. That time I was recently attacked by my rooster and had to tend to the wound, and there is a local clinic in Kamikatsu, but for certain injuries, we have to go to the nearest hospital, which is about 45 minutes away. So it is certainly an inconvenience. And again, that would require a car, and, you know, relying only on buses in such emergencies would be, could be very risky.
And how are you getting on with your animals? Because as part of this deal, you have to look after chickens and dogs. And like you say, at one point, your rooster was a bit of a bully, but it seems... Have you made peace with each other?
Yeah, I grew up in a city, and I grew up in a family that traveled quite a bit. And so pets were never something that made sense for my parents. But I've always wanted a dog, and I always wanted to live with animals. And so I finally get this chance to take care of two dogs and four chickens. And yeah, they also kind of add to the daily rhythms of life, waking up and then taking the dogs for a walk and feeding the chicken, letting them out so they're free range and run free. And it's been wonderful.
In exchange, I'm gathering you get great eggs.
Great free eggs and great cheap rent, yes.
Yeah. And so do you cook with the eggs? Often, do you have a particular dish? Do you do this Japanese omelet thing, or do you do much more Western style stuff?
Tamago yaki. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic. Yeah, I do that definitely if I have to prepare some sort of bento for the day.
And so what be your signature dish if you have a friend or if a family or someone would come around? Do you have anything you particularly kind of cook and like you this is what you whip out?
Well, right now it's summer, and so the only thing I'm really like whipping out is cold somen. So it's kind of like a thin noodle, and we put it over ice, and so it's very cold. And so that's something I'm eating almost every other day. So probably that. And then a squeeze of sudachi, which is a kind of like a lime, and it's local to Tokushima.
Wow, that sounds amazing, making me feel hungry. So, so you've adapted to this kind of slower living or different sort of pace of living, like seemingly quite quickly from city life and Canada life. Is that, do you feel that's true? And do you think now that you found this, this kind of pace or type of living, do you think this could be this kind of lifestyle for the rest of your life? Or do you think this will be a period and you might get the travel bug again or go back to cities? Or do you think this is somewhere, even if it's not forever, you'll always come back to some sort of this kind of stillness and being closer to nature?
Yeah, I do think I adapted quickly, and I think adapting quickly came from also traveling quite a bit in my early 20s. But I think that when people spend time, enough time in nature, not just as a trip, find that it's really just better for your mental and, you know, physical well-being. And so in that sense, it almost feels kind of natural or intuitive to return to nature. And so there are challenges and things I certainly miss of the city, the cultural aspects and the, you know, access to different entertainment, arts, and, you know, culture. But I think that, especially, I don't know if I can say post-pandemic, but, you know, coming out of the pandemic and the worst of the pandemic, that this is a lifestyle that feels much more sustainable for myself personally, but also for the planet, and being able to do things like grow my own food and being in close, you know, close contact with a community that feels very nurturing. That definitely does feel more long-term than short-term.
Because I guess you have sort of Golden Week and these festivals and holidays and things like that, but I'm supposing there isn't much theater or music or cinema. I guess you probably have streaming online services though that you can have at home, like everywhere else. But that sort of arts and culture still probably seems quite concentrated in the cities.
Yeah, definitely. There's no theater. Sorry, Benjamin. Yeah. But I think that if you take kind of entertainment or arts and culture from a broader perspective, the festivals, the matsuri that happen in the summer, in the fall, and kind of small ones throughout the year are definitely so fascinating from an outsider perspective, where there's a lot of dance that have been passed on and performances. There's a lot of instruments and musical components to these festivals as well, but certainly not theatrical performances or entertainment in maybe the more modern sense.
Yeah, I remember going all the way to actually Kyoto to go and see a no play. So obviously that doesn't really happen. That doesn't happen very much anywhere anymore, but still very much of the cities. And so how have you found your homestay program? Have you had many visitors and how's that been? How have people found it? And have they been very differently surprised? What have they been surprised about the way of life?
Yeah, so the homestay program I run is called Ino. Ino is the local dialect for return home. And so the idea was to create a place in Kamikatsu where people felt like they could come back to anytime and create connections with the community, so much so that they felt like it was kind of a home of sorts. And so the homestay program, we primarily guide foreigners, or English-speaking guests, in Japan. We started in the pandemic, so our borders have been quite strict. And so it was foreigners already living in Japan who wanted a chance to travel within domestically, but couldn't leave. And so a lot of our guests were seeking also kind of an escape from the city to go somewhere more, more in nature.
So I amazingly mispronounced that in my introduction. So apologies to everyone for that. So
no.
what have people found most? Have people been really surprised about when they've come to visit, or have they been surprised by how it hasn't been as different or difficult to live or adapt there? Or if they've sort of kind of come away with like, oh, I didn't realize about this or that.
Yeah, I think in terms of like natural beauty, I certainly think that Kamikatsu is a beautiful place in Japan, maybe in the world. But I think people are less surprised by the nature and more surprised by the sense of community they feel in Kamikatsu. Mm. And I think that kind of access to community is very hard in the countryside, even for Japanese who speak Japanese. Not that necessarily people are closed, but that fostering those relationships just takes time. And I think that's true anywhere else in the world. But through us and through this homestay program, they have a chance to really have that access to the community much quicker, and then can feel the depths of that.
And how have you found sort of meeting up with the locals? I guess picking tea and making tea together must immediately bond you. As you say, you're the youngest of the Bancha tea farmers. Suddenly they've embraced you with that. But I guess that community aspect, because there's just that sense of time and doing things and going through those seasons, so you experience things together. I mean, have you learned anything particular from maybe the older locals, or that sense of community you'd want to share?
Yeah, I think that certainly the only way to kind of be in the community is to just spend time doing the things where the needs are the most, and that is often labor. And so spending time harvesting tea, as you said, or I'm also part of a women's group in my local area within Kamikatsu. And what we do, we plant flower beds along the sides of the road just to kind of make Kamikatsu look pretty. And so there are a lot of community efforts that are done from Kamikatsu as a whole, but even within the smaller areas within Kamikatsu. And so spending time doing those activities really helps strengthen and nurture the relationships. Remind me the second part of your question.
Well, I guess it was just whether you've learned anything from others there. I'm interested also, because you speak Japanese, but I've been told, even people who spoke for a long time, you have a lot of, first in the rural, there's a very strong dialects, which can be very hard to understand, even for people who lived all of their life there, but come from the city. And there's a lot of these, I forget the technical word, but there's a lot of these sounds in Japanese which don't have a specified meaning, but really change the context of a sentence and give a kind of sense of like ums and ahs and those type of words, like these wahs and kas and ohs and no type of sounds. But the way you put them into sentences really have a kind of very subtle meaning of how conversations happen. Have you found that sort of conversation goes well still with the locals, or do you find you feel you're missing some nuance about what they're saying, or do you just let the musicality of their words flow over you?
Yeah, I would definitely say a bit of both. The local dialect, especially in people who are more elderly, it's so thick that I sometimes question if I can really speak or understand Japanese. But slowly over time, I'm starting to hear some of the words, or the way, as you said, the way people intonate or use those kind of smaller particles. I think what's more interesting is that Japanese has a culture of kind of reading the air, or trying to understand what people feel. It's kind of like empathy, but maybe even more nuanced, in that you're trying to understand how the room feels. And so that kind of culture is quite challenging for me, growing up in North America, being used to just being much more direct, you know. If I don't understand what you're feeling, I'll ask you how you're feeling. And communicating that is sometimes difficult for Japanese who are trying to share that through, you know, what they say, like the air. So that's difficult. Okay. And that's probably true of most of Japan, not just where I am.
Okay, that makes sense of that sort of feeling that sometimes it's a little bit more closed as a sort of first order impression on the surface. But like you say, actually, there's a lot going around in the room or through other things, which you can understand if you're understand the culture very well. But it's harder to if you're just visiting or there for a short time. And do many of the younger people in Kamikatsu end up leaving to the cities, or do they find that they want to live this way of life? Is there this typical pull between the rural and the city that you found, or have you got this reverse that we've seen, like, you know, like people like you coming back to the village?
Yeah, Japan, I mean, sorry, Kamikatsu has no high school, so that's definitely a challenge for the younger kids. There's only a middle school, and after middle school, people have to leave Kamikatsu to do boarding school in the city or go to other cities and other prefectures. So that's definitely a loss of, you know, young people. You see kind of more late 20s or people in their 30s moving to Kamikatsu. There's a term in Japan called I-turn and U-turn. U-turn is when someone born from the rural areas leaves and goes to a city and comes back to the rural places. And then I-turn refers to somebody who is born in a city and moves to the countryside. And so you see a couple U-turns happening now, but more I-turns, people from the cities coming to rural areas, rural places like Kamikatsu.
I was reading an article about wasabi farming and how, on the one hand, some of the wasabi farms are dying out because traditionally they were in families, and the younger generations of that family don't want to work on the farms anymore. But that it was partially offset a little bit by these people returning from the city, not being part of the family, but being welcomed as potentially handing over to the farms to these essentially strangers, but people who work there. So I can see that in the tradition. Do you think this might happen a little bit with the tea farming? Because I had the impression that a lot of these older tea farmers, you know, it's very hard work. So they've got to an age where they can't farm that season anymore. And so you're losing those tea farms, but they've managed to recruit someone like you, at least for the now, to do that. Or do you think inevitably this sort of tradition will start decaying away because there's not enough of a younger cohort to come and keep it alive?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a concern of the locals in Kamikatsu for the tea, for bancha. I think that, well, in the case of bancha, people used to do it only for their families, and it was not something that was being sold and produced. And I think when it reaches a level of selling and production, then it is necessary for others from outside to come support that. And I think that there are an increasing number of farmers who are coming to Kamikatsu to support those things. So I hope that's not the case, and I hope it doesn't die out. And I hope that people kind of see the value in these traditions or these kind of agricultural practices and are motivated by the lifestyle to move to the countryside.
Excellent. I thought maybe we'd play a very short round of overrated, underrated, and I just give a thing. And then you can say whether you think it's overrated or underrated, or you can pass or make some comments. So if you're up for it.
Sounds good. Sounds sure. Good.
Okay. So the first one is toilets that play music.
Underrated.
I found this was quite common in the cities, in hotels and places like Tokyo and things. They would often have these kind of toilets and things. I don't know whether you have many restaurants or communal toilets in the village? Probably not, but I'm assuming you don't have music playing toilets much in Kamikatsu, or is it a thing as well?
No music playing toilets in Kamikatsu.
That's
You're so
it.
far apart from your neighbors that you can really make any noise you
If you
want
want.
and you probably won't be heard. But I think that they're nice. Yeah, definitely in the city when you want a bit of privacy, and it's usually nature sounds.
Sure. Okay. Sitting in very hot baths.
Underrated.
Underrated.
I love onsens. The bathing houses, and I enjoy a nice soak.
Yeah. Is there a bathing house in the village? Is there like a village inn or ryokan or something like this as well? Is that still a tradition, or do people just mostly have it in their houses?
Yeah, there's one actually about 100 meters away from me, so I'm very close to an onsen and can, yeah, and I frequent the onsen, especially in the winter.
And is there a kind of little community which builds around that, or is it still a very kind of private thing? Because sometimes you have more of a community feel, and obviously there's a kind of sometimes there's like a woman female gathering aspect to it.
Yeah, there is. In the past, actually, the onsen used to be free for locals. It's not anymore. There's a discounted rate for locals. But during that time, I heard that it was just a gathering place. Even now, if I go, I'm bound to run into somebody I know. So I think that can be a turnoff for some people, but for me, it's not a problem.
Were there a lot of grumbles when they start when they were being charged?
Yeah, probably.
I can imagine. Okay, train journeys in Japan.
Oh, these are all, I think, underrated. I think that they're some of the best things about Japan. Yeah, the train journeys. It's really accessible, and as a foreigner, you can usually get a discounted Japan Rail Pass. And so I think it's the best way to travel.
Great. Well, that's all of my underrated,
That's
overrated ones.
it.
Just a handful there. And is there any other local foods or dishes around in your place that you've either learned to cook or that you really like? So you say there's a lot of like citrus, and obviously you have this quite famous tea. But there's kind of seems to be a lot of regional specialties which you really only get around the region. Have you picked up any? And is there like a famous little, or not famous, but is there a little local restaurant that people go to, or do mostly people eat at home?
Yeah, there's not so many restaurants in Kamikatsu, but the ones that are here are, I think, in my opinion, great. I think that there's a lot of dishes using shiitake, like a mushroom, and that's delicious in the season. In early spring, there's a river fish called ayu. It's kind of a sweet fish, that's also delicious. A lot of the vegetable and rice in Kamikatsu is great, and people attest to the water being the source of tasty vegetables and rice. And I think for an average Japanese, there's something extremely special. But for me, being able to eat such good local seasonal vegetables is very, very wonderful.
And is maybe like a quarter or your half your vegetables now grown by you in some fashion, or you have a helping hand in it, or is it not quite that large amount?
Not quite that large amount yet, but I aspire to be able to grow that much, or maybe all of my vegetables. But right now, I do go to the farmers market and purchase most of my produce there, which is grown by local farmers in Kamikatsu.
Great. And what kind of maybe final couple of questions. What sort of projects are you working on at the moment? Obviously, you have Inao, so the homestay, and it seems that you write this wonderful newsletter. But before that, you did a lot of photography, and you seem to have rediscovered writing. Are these kind of artistic projects you're doing? And obviously, you're growing food. Are you excited for any projects now or into the long term?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy capturing what I'm feeling and what I'm seeing through writing and photos. That's something I've always done, maybe a bit more privately and now a bit more publicly through the newsletter. But touching dirt and doing things with my own hands is quite new to me. I didn't think I could I was capable of doing things like growing my own food or, you know, making things with wood. But these are things that I'm learning I actually can do. And so using my hands and doing these projects are something that I have been putting a lot of time and labor of love into.
Great. And then final question, do you have any advice for people or thoughts for people, maybe advice if you're thinking about traveling or advice for people who are thinking going from city to rural or thinking of living in a more circular or slower way, or any thoughts or advice you've had on all of the travels and things and living that you've done so far?
Yeah, I think being able to just see a diverse amount of, you know, the way people live and seeing how people choose to spend their time, how people choose to spend their money, I think can be just a really enriching experience. And so you have those things to contrast and see, oh, that's probably something I can take into my own life or not. And so I don't think the countryside is necessarily for everyone, but I do think that people can incorporate aspects that bring more nature into their lives or bring more self-sufficiency into their lives. And I think a good starting point for that is spending time in the countryside and then being able to see what you can take back to wherever home is for you. And if you do decide to move to the countryside, that just changing your frame of mind and seeing kind of the things that are inconveniences as kind of opportunities for you to spend your time in other ways, and disconnecting from a culture of convenience can be just a really personally enriching thing. And so that's what I've found for myself. And so yeah, I hope everyone gets to spend some time in the countryside, whether it's permanent, temporal, you know, just transient. And if kamikatsu interests you in particular, or kind of sustainability from a countryside perspective, I'd be happy to welcome you here to kamikatsu.
Excellent. That'd be an excellent opportunity to visit. And that sounds really good. So change your mindset in terms of inconvenience, and wherever you go, bring back something to wherever you think of as home. That sounds excellent. So Kana-chan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
If you appreciate the show, please like and subscribe, as it helps others find the podcast.